This week's Labyrinth Library podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/lablib. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Hello and again, welcome to the Labyrinth Library Podcast. How are you doing this week? As always, I hope that you are well. Things, of course, here are good. You know, I'm still enjoying that intro. It's good fun. I'm thinking about doing some alternate intros, maybe something more humorous or more creative or entertaining, but I'll stick with the straight-ahead one for a little while, let everyone get used to it. You know, maybe if somebody's just coming back to the podcast and hasn't heard about what I'm doing, they'll be a little shocked. But anyway, that's something I'm keeping in mind. Things here are going well. You know, we got the nice biting February cold. I've decided February is just a bad month anywhere you go in terms of weather in general. And for me, it's not only cold, it's also really busy. We've got the drama club doing their big to-do in the middle of the month, and there's a speech contest and all sorts of good stuff. But on the other hand, you know, things are winding down. The school year's almost over. And once March kicks in, we get to coast. I wouldn't want to use the word coast because then they think I'm not working for my money. We don't have classes to teach, which means we can divert our extraordinary energies and efforts elsewhere towards improving ourselves, perhaps. But things are going well. I just got in the mail yesterday a copy of Ender's Shadow, one of the parallel book to Ender's Game. And I remember telling my kids about it because a lot of them really liked the character Bean in the book. And so I said, go pick up Ender's Shadow. Of course, I hadn't read it, but now I am. And I like Bean. Bean is cool. So we'll talk more about Bean at some other future time. But right now, we're here to talk about a different book. I told you last week that it's by one of my favorite science fiction authors, John Scalzi, and it is narrated by none other than Will Wheaton. And I did get a correct guess from Marissa, who once again came in and housed all of you. She guessed that it was Fuzzy Nation by John Scalzi. So why don't we take a look at this book? Now, once upon a time, there was a man named H. Beam Piper. And he wrote a series of books that began with Little Fuzzy, which is a tale of space-going humans who have to learn to live on a world with an adorably cute yet sentient species. Now, while I haven't read any of these books, my research tells me they are the type of fun, optimistic science fiction that is so emblematic of the early 60s. They dealt not only with issues of human expansion into space, but what it means to be an intelligent, sentient species. Given we only have one case study, you know, us, that definition will necessarily be narrow and, of course, challenged. Humans have trouble relating with other humans who live only a 6-hour drive away, after all, so being able to relate to a non-human sentience that evolved on another planet will be a massive philosophical undertaking. So in 2010, John Scalzi announced on his blog that he had done a reboot of Piper's work, revisiting the characters, the themes, and the world that Piper had created, and seeing what he could do with them. He did this partly because it seemed like a good idea, but also because it was something that hadn't really been done before in literature. Now, if you're a fan of science fiction, you know that stories from the visual media, TVs and movies especially, get rebooted from time to time. The most notable recent examples are Star Trek and Battlestar Galactica and shows like Smallville and the most recent run of the Batman movies. If you read comics, you know this happens all the time there as well, in big ways and small. Characters like Green Lantern, Thor, and the Fantastic Four are fundamentally the same as when they were created, but they've evolved in ways their creators may never have expected. Now, in all of these examples, right, the fundamental core of each story is kept from the original. The world, the characters, the themes, and it is given new life. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And Scalzi felt that Piper's world was good enough and interesting enough that it deserved to be reintroduced to a modern audience who might not otherwise know about it. So just for fun, he started writing Fuzzy Nation, a book that uses the characters and ideas from Little Fuzzy, the first of Piper's books, and builds an entirely new story out of them. What resulted was a story that he thought was good enough to let out into the wild, so to speak, and so, with the help of some intellectual property law and the blessing of Piper's estate, he published Fuzzy Nation in 2011. Now again, as I said, and this is an important caveat, I haven't read the original Piper books, but if they're half as much fun to read as this one was, then I really should pick them up. In the future, humankind has expanded out into space, as we so often do. With us, we have taken that peculiar human trait, naked avarice, and brought it with us. The Zarathustra Corporation, or ZaraCorp for short, is one of the leaders in exploiting and extracting usable resources from a planet. They've cornered the market on these things called sunstones, a decorative rock that glows with its wearer's body heat and makes diamonds basically look like beach pebbles. And they've turned the ravaging of worlds into an art, a horribly environmentally destructive art. Jack Holloway is a contract surveyor, a former trial lawyer, and not a very nice man. He helps ZaraCorp search for sunstones on the hostile world of Zara 23 with the help of Carl, a dog with a fondness for explosions. Holloway finds seams of sunstone and gets his cut of the money. It's a nice enough arrangement out on a backwater little world, and it doesn't get complicated until he and Carl discover a sunstone deposit that could fill the company's coffers for decades. And at the same time, he encounters a curious form of life, or rather, it encounters him. Small, bipedal, intensely curious and undeniably clever, the Fuzzies, as Jack names them, seem to be truly remarkable animals. It is not until the ZaraCorp field biologist and Jack's former girlfriend, Janice Wangai, suggests they might be sentient that things get truly complicated. After all, colonial law is very clear on what companies like ZaraCorp are and are not allowed to do on each planet they run, and ravaging the world of another sentient species is pretty much at the top of their do-not-do list. It soon becomes a race to save the Fuzzies from ZaraCorp and its army of lawyers. If they win, the Fuzzies will have a planet on which they can grow and thrive. If ZaraCorp wins, they'll have nothing but the least useful bits of dirt and shrubbery left. Holloway has to do a good thing, but he has to do it his way, a way that rarely has him acting like a good man. Now, the first thing I thought of when I finished this was actually, I needed that. I mean, my reading choices for a while had been kind of heavy, or at least not a whole lot of fun to read. Good, yeah, absolutely, but not fun. I mean, I know this because I find myself doing things that aren't reading, you know, listening to podcasts, reading through articles I've saved on Instapaper, going through old columns at crack.com, things like that. But with this book, there was none of that stalling. I read it every chance I could, and I blew through the whole thing in 2 days. So let that be take-home lesson number one. This book is fun to read. And while it is an adventure, it does hit on some interesting and contemporary topics, not the least of which is the question of how ethically a corporation should be expected to behave. ZaraCorp, like any company, has a primary mission to make money, especially as the company is publicly traded. They have to get money to those stockholders who've invested in them so they can make more money to exploit more resources. And that's a point that Scalzi's made in his own blog. He says, quote, "I think the majority of corporations act logically and rationally and in a manner consistent with the general reason for their existence," he writes. "And the reason most corporations exist, and most large multinational corporations in particular, is simple. To maximize shareholder value." So in Fuzzy Nation, he takes this to the place where corporate rational self-interest turns bad. You see, it is perfectly possible for a corporation to achieve its goal while still being environmentally responsible or socially conscious. I mean, in other words, to fulfill its responsibility to the shareholders without violating the ethical or moral codes of the people who actually make up those groups. But there are those who are all too willing to put the fiduciary responsibility of the corporation above the ethical responsibilities of people, and that's where the evil corporation comes in. And ZaraCorp fits this to a T. I mean, they see nothing but profits in Zara 23, and if the Fuzzies stand in their way, sentient or not, they will do whatever is necessary to eliminate them, while at the same time doing their level best to stay within the legal bounds prescribed by the colonial authority. Or at least not to get caught crossing them. In the end, this becomes about why we do what we do, and how we project those reasons onto other people. ZaraCorp is motivated by untempered greed and assumes that Holloway will be too. Holloway is interested in himself, but finds himself needing to be interested in other people. And the motivations of the Fuzzies for most of the book is really unclear, but they too have to learn the difference between what they think other people want and what they really want. It's a fast, tight book that's a lot of fun to read. It's got characters you'll like, even if they are somewhat despicable, and has some moments of wonderful emotion that just come around the corner and hit you like a hammer. It's part philosophical adventure, part legal thriller, part sarcastic comedy verging on satire. Books like this are really why I keep coming back to John Scalzi. So there you go. Let me give you a quote. This is from Jack Holloway, and it kind of follows up on what I was just talking about. He says, after they've offered him a ridiculous settlement offer that they can't understand why he would ever reject, he says, "With all due respect for your considerable skills and intellect, the fact of the matter is that you have absolutely no clue what it is I want out of this." So that is from Fuzzy Nation by John Scalzi, which, by crazy coincidence, is available up on audible.com. Can you believe my luck? Last week I completely tanked by giving you a Will Wheaton book, and Will Wheaton doesn't have his books on Audible. I'm sure he will someday, maybe. But believe it or not, John Scalzi does. And for you, my loyal listeners of the Labyrinth Library, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 14-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their fine services. Again, this week I do recommend pick up Fuzzy Nation by John Scalzi. It is narrated wonderfully by Will Wheaton, who does a great job at this kind of thing. It'll be great to listen to whether you're driving or commuting or cooking or, I don't know, ripping out giant seams of rock from the mountainsides. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/lablib. Again, that is audibletrial.com/lablib for your free audiobook. Support the podcast, get some great books to listen to. You will be glad that you did. So I guess that is about it for this week. Let me see, next week, we're coming up on the end of the month, you know, February does blow by. Next week, we are going to look at a book of, I hate to call it a book of prophecy, because it's so wrong, and because the author knows that he's right in his own weird way. But it is basically a book about how the year 2012 will progress until the inevitable end on December 21st. And it is a book with many interesting facts, true facts, which have all been completely made up. If you can tell me what that book is, you will win a free visit by the Century Toad. Otherwise, you'll just have to wait for the end, just like the rest of us. All right. Well, thank you very much, as always, for listening. I hope that whatever you do this week, you do it well, you enjoy doing it, and I will talk to you all again next week. A text version of this review will be up on the blog, thelablib.org, along with any relevant links I can think of. If you have anything you want to say or any suggestions you'd like to make, please leave a comment and let me know. If you have a book you would like to recommend, I would be happy to hear it. If you'd like to send me an email, send it to labyrinthlibrary@gmail.com. And if you like what you hear, please give a review on iTunes, become a fan on Facebook, or follow LabLib on Twitter. This podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license, so feel free to share it, but please don't sell it or change it. The music is courtesy of Kevin MacLeod at www.incompetech.com. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next week. And until then, keep reading.